Before we crack on with today's show, just a reminder that the special episode we recorded last week with Gidon Levy, in which he answers some fascinating questions from listeners, is still available for download and is well worth a listen. And now on with today's show. Hello and welcome to Haaretz Weekly, your audio guide to Israel, the Middle East and the Jewish world. I'm Simon Spungin. On today's show, we have a two-parter for you today, listener. Coming up shortly, I'll be chatting to Haaretz's senior Arab world commentator, Tzvi Barel, about Israel's shadow war with Iran, the nuclear deal, and how all that fits in with President Joe Biden's foreign policy. Before that, however, with the coronavirus infection rate rising and the Israeli government reconvening its COVID cabinet, I'm joined by Haaretz's special pandemic correspondent, Amos Harel. Thanks for joining us, Amos.
Thank you.
So, Amos, one day you and I are going to have a good chinwag on this podcast about the other beat that you occasionally cover for Haaretz, black music. In the meantime, we're going to have to make do with something that sounds like a blues band but really isn't, the Delta variant. Is Israel facing another wave of the coronavirus, Amos? What can be done to prevent it, and will it help to panic?
I doubt whether this is a wave which would be somewhat similar to what we've encountered before. I think the situation is not as serious as it was in the winter or last summer. The main change, of course, is that most of the Israeli population is by now vaccinated with two doses of the Pfizer vaccine. So this changes most of the math regarding the pandemic. And panic is not a good plan anyway. For the time being, we've seen panic among some in the Israeli media. Some of the response made by the ministers and especially people at the Ministry of Health was slightly overboard, in my view. But other than that, if we look at the latest details, of course, I might be wrong, and this virus has proved us wrong many times before. At least from the latest numbers we've received from this morning, it doesn't seem to be anything like the previous waves of this pandemic in Israel.
Is that because most Israelis, as you say, are vaccinated? Because the Delta variant is a lot more contagious than the previous variants.
And even the Delta variant is, in fact, more contagious. It was first identified in India. Now we can see it spreading in the UK. Israel is a few weeks behind the UK when you talk about this specific variant, but we're better off than India and even better off than the Brits, mostly, as you said, because of the percentage of people who were actually vaccinated here. It's about 60% of the Israeli population, and about 90% of those over 50 who have, to begin with, are more in danger of being hurt in a more serious way by COVID. So, again, if we look at the sheer numbers, 60% of Israelis already vaccinated at least once, 55%, more than 55%, have received both doses. It's mostly spreading now among children who are naturally unvaccinated at this time. Mm. And we're seeing a government effort, which included Prime Minister Bennett today recording a video calling younger people to get the vaccines soon. We're seeing a government effort to deal with the problem immediately. So, of course, it's spreading. As you said, it's more contagious. According to the latest data from England and Scotland, it's about 40 to 50% more contagious. So this is slightly more dangerous. On the other hand, as I said, most of the people who are in danger are actually younger, and there's not much of a chance that they'll catch it in a very aggressive manner. For the time being, there are only about 40 people in Israel who are hospitalized with COVID, only 22 or 23 who are in a severe condition. So this is, again, we'll have to see. But this doesn't seem to be anything like the clear and present danger that we've faced in January or last July or anything like that. This is very different. Of course, action must be taken. I think more than anything else, we should be bothered by what's going on at Ben-Gurion Airport. Mm. The self-quarantine rules should be implemented in a much more drastic way. But the danger isn't that clear, and the numbers are not showing anything serious yet. Of course, we're used to this thing, you know, just wait 2 weeks, because you usually have to wait 2 weeks until things get worse. We've seen that in the past. But if you look at the basic data, it's different than before, and this is why I think that even if we will encounter some kind of a mini wave, I don't think that this will be as lethal as what we've seen before.
Mm. Is it significant that around half of the people infected in Israel with the Delta variant were fully vaccinated?
It is and it isn't. It's significant because it means that we're not fully protected, but we knew that already. On the other hand, I think there are, you know, probably 3 to 5 cases of people who were vaccinated twice and then hospitalized with the Delta variant. So there's a difference between catching the virus and between becoming ill from COVID. And if it's asymptomatic and it doesn't bring you to any kind of danger, then it's not such a big deal. There are many mysteries about this. We don't know yet if whether people who are vaccinated can catch the virus and then spread it to others without really falling ill. It's known to have happened before regarding people who weren't yet vaccinated, but what about people who are? We'll have to see. There are many mysteries about the new variant. It's clear that it's dangerous. It's clear that the government needs to take control of the situation and react accordingly. But the point I'm trying to make is that we shouldn't panic. And what I see, especially among some in the Israeli media, the immediate reaction is, let's panic and let's scare people as much as possible. This isn't the right way to deal with that. It's quite clear that COVID isn't going away, not in the world at large, and not even in Israel anytime soon. Talk of herd immunity perhaps started too soon because we didn't consider the possibility of a much more contagious variant of the virus. And yet, the end result is, at least for the time being, isn't something that will rock our reality and change everything and push us back to the first or second wave where COVID was, you know, the beginning and end of everything here. This is not the case right now.
Mm. Finally, Amos, for personal reasons, I have to ask, is August the 1st still a realistic target date for reopening to tourists, or is there going to be another delay?
I'm not sure yet. There could be another delay. The original hope here was that, yes, we have reached herd immunity. Yes, there are somewhere between a dozen and two dozen cases a day. They're not severe. Everything is under control, and then people could come here and the tourism could be restarted, the economy can get back to normal, and so on. It turns out that it's not as easy as we hoped, and because of the situation at the world at large, this affects Israel as well, and the Delta variant has managed to somewhat spread in Israel. I assume if cases remain in the low hundreds, that the government would be at least a little bit weary of opening the gates completely to tourists. But it would probably be better than last year. Probably many Israelis would still go abroad. More than anything else, it's about controlling the entrances, about controlling Ben-Gurion Airport, and about making sure that anybody who enters Israel, whether he's an Israeli citizen coming back or an American or English tourist, gets the test. The government keeps this under control and is focused on preventing the virus from spreading again.
Mm. And we have a whole Greek alphabet of variants to get through before this is over, presumably. Amos, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Listener, stay with us. After this jingle, we'll be back with Tzvi Barel. Tzvi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So before we get into the nitty-gritty of the Iran nuclear talks and everything that involves, there is something I'd like to clear up. Do Israel and the US mean the same thing when they talk about a commitment to ensuring that Iran never gets a nuclear weapon?
Well, they mean the same thing, basically. But the question is, when do you decide that Iran has a nuclear weapon or has the ability to combine materials which will make a base for the atomic bomb? Israel says that every stage of the way is a stage in creating and building an atomic bomb. The United States has a different view. They say that they, as long as Iran is in the, let's say, borders of the agreement, and it doesn't enrich uranium, which is beyond what was dictated to her, then there is no reason to suspect that they are intending to build some bomb. But Israel claims, on the other side, that this is too late. This approach of the United States is giving Iran enough space and enough room to advance its abilities to build an atomic bomb without any hindrance. So the period between its ability to break through the borders and establish itself as an atomic superpower is too short. Israel would like to have at least a year. Israel says or claims that the period that Iran is now at is a lot shorter than a year. It's a question of weeks, of months, and this is why we, the United States, should not allow it to proceed further.
Mm. Over the past 7 days or so, Tzvi, the lead headline in Haaretz has dealt with Iran on no fewer than five occasions.
Yeah.
Are we on the verge of seeing the 2015 nuclear deal re-implemented? Is that imminent?
I think it is imminent, because what we see right now is a confluence of interest between the United States and the rest of the Western superpowers, including Russia and China, and Iran. They both sides want to have the nuclear deal re-established, re-implemented. Iran needs it for its own economic reasons and for the survival of its regime. The United States needs it in order really to take the Iranian issue off its back and not to get involved again in a process of intimidation which may lead to a war.
So to paraphrase the German foreign minister, what nuts are left to crack?
Well, the nuts are still issues that can be solved immediately or can be dragged on for weeks or for months or for whatever. I mean, some of the nuts have to do with the Iranian demand to get some guarantees that the United States won't withdraw from the new agreement in any time, not in the near future and not ever. So what kind of guarantees can you give? I mean, you don't ever know that if Iran is going to withdraw, and then what? Are you bound by this commitment, or are you bound by any other commitments, and you don't, you cannot give such guarantees. You can just say, well, we are ready, we are signing an agreement. For Iran, it is not enough. Iran wants to have guarantees that the United States would not operate behind the back of the agreement, meaning that on one hand it will sign an agreement and which will remove all the sanctions, the American sanctions from it. And on the other hand, Iran is afraid that the United States will talk to all kind of companies and conglomerates and countries and states, telling them, well, you better watch it and don't do business right now with Iran. So Iran wants to have these guarantees that nothing of that sort will happen. The United States want to have guarantees, of course, that the Iranian side is implementing to the letter the agreement which was signed in 2015. And it wants to have more inspection. It wants to have inspection over the sites which were not defined by the previous agreement as nuclear sites. And on top of everything, the idea which stands behind Biden's policy is that this agreement, when signed, will be the basis for additional agreements, additional negotiations over the ballistic missiles plans, over the question of Iran's involvement in the Middle East, supporting terror and so on. the Iranians are saying, no way, this is an agreement about the nuclear program, not about everything, anything else, because this is an infringement on our sovereignty.
Are Israeli concerns being listened to? And what about concerns, as you mentioned, regarding Iran's support of terror groups? Is this just going to be put to one side for the time being?
Well, it is going to be put, especially the question of supporting terror or not supporting terror, and other questions are going to be put aside, because right now the main issue is the nuclear agreement. Mm. Israel's voice is not listened to very much. In fact, Israel had angered the American administration to the extent that her actions in Iran, or which are said to be her actions, attributed to Israel, had a lot to do with the hindrance that we have right now in the negotiations, the elimination of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, the one who was defined as Iran's atomic program's father. His elimination, by attributed to Israel, caused the Iranian parliament to legislate this clause in the law, which says that from now on, Iran will not allow any further inspection in its nuclear sites. They extended it for 3 months until May, and they extended it once more till the 24th of June, which was last week. And right now, what we hear from Iran is that this is the end of it, meaning Iran had stopped all kind of inspections, and the information which has been collected and will be collected by the cameras and the other facilities which are installed there to inspect the sites is not going to be transferred to the IAEA.
Will that resume as part of any future nuclear agreement?
Definitely. It is supposed to
That's one of the main parts of the agreement, inspection.
Exactly. I mean, like everything else, it is supposed to withdraw from enriching uranium beyond the restrictions which the agreement states. It is supposed to let the inspectors to do their job in full. And so everything has to go back or to return to its place as it used to be in 2015.
Mm. Yair Lapid is in Rome. He's meeting with Antony Blinken. What kind of message will he be giving?
Israel is, unlike the messages that Bibi Netanyahu used to distribute, Israel is going on a much more calm tone, meaning we are against the agreement, but we're not going to sabotage the agreement, meaning that we want you to take into consideration our opinion, our views, which is way too late right now to integrate Israel's opinion into these negotiations, because they are already past this state of adding all kind of issues and clauses and everything else. They are now on the verge of finalizing this agreement. But anyhow, the Israeli position is we need to have good relations with the United States. We need good relations, especially with the President Biden, and we are not going to sabotage this agreement. Mm. Does it mean that Israel will stop acting in Iran in a fashion that it used to do in the last 2, 3, 4 years? No, it means that Israel will reconsider its military behavior towards Iran.
Mm. Not just its diplomatic rhetorical statements?
Yes.
It might alter its military approach as well?
Yes, because if the agreement is on the verge of being signed, and if Israel will be perceived as the one who is hindering it, then Israel's position not only vis-a-vis the United States, but vis-a-vis the European Union, will be awkward. And Israel wants to prevent itself from falling into the same trap, because Israel understands that by acting against Iranian sites and the Iranian scientists, the nuclear program did not stop. The Iranian nuclear program was not blocked. I mean, it is it is more fearful perhaps for scientists to work, or they have to take more precautious measures to protect themselves. But by and large, it has not stopped the program from being developed.
Mm. I think I read that the Iranian nuclear program is one of the slowest in world history. They started 25, 30 years ago with the importing centrifuges from Pakistan. Is that because of outside interference or a lack of will on the Iranian part?
Well, it is first of all, it takes time to accumulate knowledge, not just the components which you need for it, but the knowledge how to produce them yourself, because it became more and more difficult to purchase them from outer sources. Mm. So you have, and Iran has done a tremendous job in this, they have developed in-house a lot of material, a lot of components and technology inside their laboratories and the university and whatever they have there in their research compounds. So it takes time. So, but it is a kind of misleading a little bit to say that it is 25 years old. In fact, the real advancement was in the last 10 years with the building of the new sites, with the purchasing of knowledge and developing knowledge. And the knowledge stays. You can bomb whatever site you want. You can destroy it. The knowledge is there to stay. So it is a question of short period of time to rebuild the whole stuff, and if you want to have a bomb, then you do it. Secondly, Iran needs or wants to have a nuclear bomb, not in order to fight with it, because Iran is subscribed to the same theory that all nuclear countries are subscribed to. You don't fight with nuclear bombs. You have it for deterrence. The idea of mutual assured destruction is valid for Iran as well as it is for Russia or for the United States. So it is a question of having a deterrent. Against whom? Against the United States, against Israel, against India and Pakistan, both good friends of Iran, but yet they have proven nuclear weapons and Iran doesn't rely on anyone. And Iran wants to have this deterrent, but Iran has to survive. And if the price is not to have this kind of deterrent, but to have good economy, so be it.
Mm. Former Ambassador John Bolton claimed in an interview over the weekend that the new Israeli government gives Biden a way out of the deal. Do you think Biden wants a way out of the deal?
I think Biden made it quite clear and emphasizes along the way, saying that this is what he wants. He wants to return to the agreement. And he doesn't listen so much to what Israel is saying, either for or against the agreement. I think that Bolton, he may be a little bit in loss of touch with what is going on in Israel and with in the United States. Mm.
And how does the nuclear deal, or the resumption of the nuclear deal, fit in with Biden's general approach to the Middle East? And should Israel and its neighbors get used to being secondary or even tertiary players?
Well, it's not a question of priorities or hierarchy, who is more important and who is less important. Biden considers Iran to be in the core of what goes on in the Middle East.
Mm.
Meaning, all the blocking and coalition that we saw up till now in the Middle East were around Iran. The coalition against the war or for the war in Yemen was basically a coalition against Iran. The what we saw in Syria, what the Russian interference in Syria was in competition with Iran. Iran has a lot of influence in Asia. It has influence in Pakistan and in Afghanistan, although they are Sunni countries. And the idea is to have a calmer Middle East. And to have a calmer Middle East means that you have to dissolve the roots of animosity between two major states, which are Saudi Arabia and Iran. And what we heard in the last few days from the new president of Iran, Ibrahim Raisi, is that the top priority of his policy will be to have negotiations with Saudi Arabia. As we know that Saudi Arabia in April, or delegation from Saudi Arabia, met with Iranian delegation in Iraq. So there are things developing towards such a new understanding. It is not something that Saudi Arabia wants very much or Iran wants very much, but it's a lack of choice. And when you have the United States coming and shaking hands with the Iranians, not directly, but still showing good face to Iran, the neighbors understand that there is a new spirit, there is a new trend in this area. Israel understands it. And so does Egypt and Jordan, because if the United States has an agreement with Iran, then it is not a sin for Egypt to have or to renew relations with Iran, and for Jordan to renew relations with Iran. So it is a kind of earth-moving process. So this goes together, and it has to do with what Biden will achieve or not achieve in the coming days with the nuclear negotiation.
So one last question, Svi, before I let you get on. You say that Israel will have to accept this, and it looks as if Israel will have to accept the resumption of the nuclear deal. So what is the best case scenario now for the Israeli government and the Israeli defense establishment, assuming that a deal is signed in days, weeks, or months?
Well, Israel got nothing much to contribute in this respect, and Israel will have to stick to its old policy concerning its immediate enemies. I mean, to shrink the arena, so to say, to the Syrian area, to Lebanon, to Hezbollah, to Gaza. I mean, to know that it will not be able, or let's say it will not be allowed, to tramp on the Iranian Western deal. So it is kind of eliminating Israel's position as a superpower in the framework of a participant in the whole aerial war against Iran. Israel will have to deal with its immediate enemies.
So deal with the Iranian tentacles rather than the Iranian body itself.
Exactly.
And we will continue to see attacks on arms convoys in Lebanon.
Probably,
and
yes.
Attacks on Iranian forces settled inside Syria, but less so attacks in Iran itself, you think?
Probably. This is how I see things develop. But we have to remember that Israel operates freely or relatively freely in Syria and in Lebanon because of the Russian permission. Once there is a change in the Russian's position, then Israel will find itself again in a dilemma to attack or to abide by the Russian restrictions. It will find itself in a dilemma how to proceed with Iran if there is an agreement between the United States and Iran. Because whatever Israel does or may do in Iran, it may have an impact on the agreement, which is something which may anger the United States.
Well, at least we're no longer thinking in terms of Munich and 1939, right?
Well, we can think, but it is not there, you know.
We've moved on from those times.
Right.
Zvi, thank you very much for your time.
You are most welcome.
And that's your show for today. My thanks to Amos Harel, Zvi Barel, and as always, to our producer, Aaron Ehrlich. We'll be back again on Friday with a special Pride Month episode of Haaretz Weekend. Until then, shalom from Tel Aviv.